welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Monday, March 15th, 2010. I'm Sam Minter. I've got Yvonne Bo with me as usual. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello.
So let me start out by saying that I am indeed finally on my new 27-inch fully maxed out iMac. It is very nice. You know, the computer is doing multiple things right now, and there's barely a blip on the CPU. The memory is fairly low as well, and everything's running smoothly. Nothing, you know, I can flip between windows and everything still works, and I don't have to wait like 10 minutes for it to catch up with the fact that I just switched between one thing and another. You know, I did some video editing earlier, you know, and it just went smoothly. I didn't have to wait for anything. I didn't, you know, and the biggest thing is switching back and forth between the apps. Like, it would kind of work as long as I stayed in the one thing. But if I switched out of the one app to go to, like, check my mail or something, forget it. I'm waiting for, like, minutes on the old computer.
Let me ask a question. How much RAM do you have on the old computer versus the new one?
The old one had 2 gig. The new one has 16.
Wow. Holy shit, that's 16 gigs. That's impressive. Okay.
I think it had two.
I think it probably had two. I'm guessing. Okay.
But, you know, because I maxed it out at the time. I think at the time the default was 1, but you could upgrade to 2 or something. So I, of course, maxed it out. I maxed it out again. And, you know, Apple, of course, charges through the nose to get the pre-installed RAM. But I don't give a shit. I want to get it in the state that I have it. You know, I don't want to mess around with, oh, it came with these memory chips. I'm going to go buy these memory chips, and I'm going to swap them out, and I'm going to do this. Screw that. You know, I just hit the button that says I want the most memory you can stick in the damn thing, and I know you're charging me through the nose for the memory compared to what I could get it on the, buying it elsewhere, but, you know, whatever.
It's not as bad as it used to be. They used to the premium was far worse before. It's not as bad as it used to be.
So I
will say that.
So I will mention my transition. You know, we talked about a couple weeks ago. I gave up on the idea of doing, you know, a completely clean install and only moving over things here or there. So I did try to do the automated install. So the first thing I did was, you know, I actually moved my old computer so it's sitting next to the new one, and, you know, I was going to do the FireWire thing where you put in the old one with as FireWire target mode, so basically it shows up as a disk for the other computer, does the automatic thing.
Yep.
For some reason, which I didn't fully diagnose, the other computer just would not start up in FireWire target mode. Now, one possibility is that the old one has FireWire 400, the new one has FireWire 800, and I had to use a little adapter thing, and maybe that threw it off, I don't know. Anyway, that wouldn't work. So, of course, you know, the little thing offered me, you know, the migration assistant says, you know, one of the other options is do it by Ethernet. I'm like, okay, you know, I've got an extra Ethernet cable around here. I hooked the two machines up by Ethernet. And, you know, so I start the migration once, and, you know, it's going relatively quickly, and I'm like, there's something goofy here, because it's going too fast. And I think it turned out that in the migration thing, I accidentally unchecked move over the user data, so I was moving over my applications and stuff. But nevertheless, okay, like, at a certain point while it was trying to move the applications, it got an error message and said, you know, your old machine has stopped responding. You know, please make sure the network connections are still good, blah, 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 blah. All of that was good. The old computer, it wasn't, like, locked up or anything. It seemed like it should all be working, but it just plain wasn't. So I had to start over. And this time I made sure I didn't uncheck the user thing. So I let it go. And, you know, now I get an estimate that is more in line with my previous experiences moving stuff back and forth when I did these migrations.
Which was how many days?
Well, not days, but like around the order of 17
hours.
17, 18 hours.
Yep. Okay.
So I let it run, you know, and I start it, and I check in on it periodically, and then I go to sleep. I wake up in the morning. It had 1 hour left, and it popped up that same message again. With the old computer stopped responding. It was also while it was moving the apps. I'm like, oh crap, because I Googled, like, you know, things with the migration assistant crashing, and at least one person out there had said that they had found the problem was there was like a specific file that was causing problems, and they had to like go dig into log files and figure out what file it was and delete the file and then try again. And I'm like, oh god, I don't want to do that. So I tried it one more time. Another 17 hours go by. It stops at almost the exact same place. I'm like, oh,
for
crap.
Crying out loud.
And, you know, and I started this process, you know, Friday noonish. So of course we're talking, and now it's Saturday night. You know, it's gone. You know, we're talking 2 days gone by here, almost. So, you know, then I'm like, okay, screw it. I'm not going to try that again. Obviously, there's an issue there. So I'm going to try one of the other modes, which is to do the migration from a Time Machine backup instead.
Okay.
So, and of course, I'd had Time Machine running, so I had one, but it was, because I'd been doing this for 2 days, it was, of course, slightly out of date. So I ran one more Time Machine backup just to make sure it was absolutely current. I shut down the old computer. I unplugged the drive. I plugged it into the new one. I started it up again. And so this time it starts going, and this is overnight last night. And it ends up taking about 6 to 8 hours. It gets it done. Somewhere along, well, actually, even a little bit less. It was like five. So it was pretty fast doing it from the USB, faster than going over the Ethernet. I don't know how it would have compared to the FireWire mode that I didn't get to work. And basically everything worked. Now, each of the times that I had tried the migration, it left a bunch of like files that it tried to. So of course I've got a nice new 2 terabyte drive. I'd already filled up most of it. Because it had copied my stuff several times every time I did this.
Okay.
It doesn't have a, you know, the migration assistant doesn't have a really good resume, like figure out that you stopped in the middle and only do what's left. You know, so.
Oh, for crying out loud.
So.
Why did you sort through that?
At least it's smart. What it did, every time it made a copy, it was clearly marked as, you know, here's an old version. So it was really easy to clean up. I just went in and, marked a whole bunch of directories and trashed them. And I actually have not emptied my trash yet, so they're still taking up space, but I will soon. So then, you know, everything is now pretty much working. It's pretty sweet. One thing, I do have one stuck pixel. You know, it's a big-ass screen, lots of resolution.
It's a 27-inch screen, okay?
You know, there's like a gabillion pixels on this thing. One of them is stuck. And I'm like, God damn it. You know, but on the other hand, you know, I'm not, you know, from what I've read, Apple doesn't have a set policy on this. Usually, like, if you only have one, they'll first try to tell you, you know, look, it's one pixel. You know, if you've got dozens of them, then they'll just say, you know, here's your new computer, have fun. But for one, apparently, like, the process is basically, you tell them, I've got a stuck pixel, they'll tell you, well, that's normal, it happens sometimes. But then if you keep bitching about it, they'll eventually give you a new computer. But I'm like, you know, I just got this thing all set up. It's one pixel. And now it is like where I can see it. I'm staring at it right now, and I know it's going to bug me. Now, it is a stuck pixel, not a dead pixel, which means there's a chance it'll come back. You know?
Okay.
Although, maybe, they usually don't. But every once in a while, and they've...
I don't know. Yeah, you know what? I got to admit that I'm working on a screen right now that has a big flaw. Well, it's not... It does have a significant flaw that you can see in certain shades and colors, okay? It's a streak that runs on the left side of the screen that, depending on the shading that you're looking at of the screen, you can see it, okay? Right. And I gotta be honest with you, I'm living with that. And you know that I am picky about shit, and I'm just like, you know what? I got this thing for free, I can live with it.
Yeah.
Now, you did pay for it.
I did.
Gotta admit, so it's brand new. So I'm just like, but, I mean, it's one pixel. I mean, can you really see it that well?
Well, let's put it this way. Like, it took me a couple hours of it took me several hours of using the machine before I noticed it. But then okay. once I noticed it, I know it's there.
Yeah, it's just that you know it's there. So it took you a few hours before you did notice it.
Yeah.
All right.
You know, but and they have these little apps that just like flash colors where the pixel is really, really fast in the hopes of unsticking it. And, you know, so I added one of those to like my dashboard thing so that like, you know, whenever I bring up the dashboard, there's this big flashing square that would, you know, cause seizures in people susceptible to that kind of thing that supposedly might.
Oh, goody. And you didn't. You didn't get a seizure?
No. Not yet. Not yet.
Okay. All right.
You know, so otherwise, everything's pretty smooth yet. I've still got some of the weird stuff I have set up. I had to make little changes here and there, like, you know, but, you know, and I'm going to be working through that for weeks, I'm sure. But, and I have the old computer is still shut down. I'm going to leave it there untouched for probably at least a month. Just to make sure that I don't find anything that I decide I want in there that didn't get moved for some reason. And then it's going to get repurposed to be sort of like, you know, like everybody here in this house has, well, except Alex, has their own computer, but it'll be like...
Well, Alex's computer?
Well, yeah.
There you go.
Well, we were going to put it in his room, but then maybe, I don't know. Well, anyway, we'll see. But it'll be like a swing computer with accounts for all of us that we can just log on and use when we happen to be in whatever room it's going to be in. And I'd toyed with taking some of my stuff that, you know, is always running in the background and just... leaving it on the old computer and shutting it down on the new computer so the new computer has none of that stuff. I'll still think about that. I don't know. But, yeah, we'll see. Anyway, I'm very happy so far. Gorgeous screen, other than that one damn pixel. It's very fast. It's... Yeah, I'm thrilled. It's like, all of a sudden, I can, like, actually do shit again. Like, you know, I import pictures into iPhoto and it's like boop, 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 boop. I can edit the video. I can, like, even like bringing up websites seems faster, although it's probably not. I don't know. But, like, because that's more bandwidth. Anyway, but it's very nice. Very happy with it so far. Hopefully it'll keep me happy for a few years.
Okie dokie. Since we've
taken a bit, let's take a quick break, and then you've got a computer story of your own, and we'll talk about that in a second.
What do you get when two housewives produce an online poetry journal? Poems celebrating dishwater, breastfeeding, and lunar phases? Quick trips to the pool boy? Maybe. But they like to believe they offer much more than that. There's no telling what you'll get at the No-Tell Motel. But I hear sneaking out and keeping everything hush-hush is kind of sexy, and they're hot for discretion. Having it all keeps our two housewives awfully busy, so they like to stop and smell the posies, spend quality time with their poets, which is why their rendezvous lasts a full 7 days, a new poem each weekday. Each year they slip their room key to 52 poets and indulge in 260 poems. Their spouse's misfortunes are your gains. Meet with them daily at notellmotel.org. They'll be in room 5C, sipping the latest cocktail recommended in Martha Stewart's Living, Scribbling Marginalia.
Okay, we are back. So Yvonne told me right before we started here that he is using a computer.
Also got a new computer.
Yeah, but he is using a computer right now that's not supposed to exist.
That's right! I actually found somewhere stuck, nobody using, a dual processor G5 Mac Pro. And the one thing is
Now, Apple never sold one of these.
Sure they do.
No. There was never G5 Power... Oh, wait, Power Mac, not Power Book.
Yeah.
Oh,
Power
okay.
Mac.
See, now I was getting all excited. Yeah. I thought you'd found
laptop. Okay. No. A desktop.
Oh, okay.
A desktop.
Oh, okay. There were thousands of those. Okay. No problem. Okay.
Sure. And I thought you'd found
a unicorn. You know, like
That would have been a much better story. I gotta agree. But
and
no,
so you got
I,
me
I,
all I, excited. Just, but you know,
I know. Well, I went look. I used for doing the show, I had as an extra PC at home this quite old, must be 6 years old, HP PC, okay, that I had that was lying around. I had it had, you know, I had put in it, it's got 2 gigs of RAM, it had Windows 7, ran pretty decently, you know, not too shabby, but it was an old, you know, PC. So I'm going through my new job, and somewhere stuck under a desk is this unused Mac Pro. And I'm like, what the heck is this thing doing here? Well, nobody wants it. And I'm like, what do you mean? Well, we got this new computer for the showroom.
Were they even called Mac Pros back then, or were they just G5 Macs or something? Power Mac G5 or something.
Let me see. Wait, I got the thing here. It was the Power Mac G5. That's the exact that's the right name. Okay. Two twin 1.8 gigahertz PowerPC G5 processors. Okay. It's got 512 megabytes of RAM. I did order 4 gigs of RAM. Right now, it's running relatively slow. 160 gig hard drive, Super Drive, DVD burner, CD burner. Okay. FireWire 800, FireWire 400, optical audio out. It had Jaguar. I did upgrade it to Leopard. Okay, the latest version, because it'll run up to
Leopard. Leopard. Can't do Snow Leopard, on Intel. Right.
Can't do Snow Leopard, but a lot of the updates brought it. It's pretty. I'm working this machine, and I'm working my MacBook Pro that has Snow Leopard. Gosh, you're pretty darn close. Okay. All right. I gotta say
you're like a year back.
It's like a year back, yes. Okay. So I got the extra RAM. Now I did. Here's the one thing that was interesting. I wanted to see, well, how fast is really this computer? I ran Xbench on this, okay, in order to compare it with the other machine. This machine, actually, even though it's 2 years older, is faster than my old laptop.
Okay.
Than my 1006 laptop. So I was like, well, this is not so bad. I mean, what the hell? So I figured it's definitely a lot faster than the old Windblows PC. So,
you know, I meant to run like benchmarks on the old computer and the new computer could compare, but yeah.
To compare. Yeah. So I did that, you know, and it is a lot faster. And so it's actually a lot more convenient to use this because, well, now I've got, for example, I got my Mobile Me set up here, so it's synchronizing all my email, all my contacts, all my calendars, all my stuff between my iPhone, whatever. So now whenever I sit at any of these computers, I'm like, I could read my email here, or I could read it over there, or I could do it over here and whatever. And it's all like I'm on the same computer. It's just, you know, so that way it's super convenient. So I went, I did it. What I am going to do is I'm also going to get, since it's got a couple of drive bays, I'm going to stick a 2 terabyte hard drive in there. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so I figured that with 2 terabytes of hard disk space and, 4 gigs of RAM, it should be, you know, decent and peppy. I should be able to use it for the stuff I need at home. So, you know, so this was just a nice little find. I just got the machine. I'm actually quite happy with it. Right now, it's missing RAM. It does need RAM. But I'm quite surprised that there's still the performance out of those dual processor G5s. You know, it's pretty good.
Yeah, how old is that machine? So that's going to be a 4-year old machine, right?
No, it's older than that. This machine was built in late 2004.
Okay, wow.
So it's a 6 years old.
It's a 6-year old machine, but it was probably a top of the line Pro at the time.
It was a top of the line Pro at the time. Yes, it was.
So okay.
So you know. So there you go. I managed to get a computer without having to. Well, I did have to spring for the RAM. So $100.
Yeah.
So not too bad.
Not bad at all. So, let's go ahead and transition from that. It's too early for a break, but let's move on. You'd mentioned I'd sent you at least one article, and there have been a bunch along these lines, and I think we even talked about it on the show like a month ago. But the stories about, you know, Apple and Google getting on each other's nerves. Let's say. have been accelerating. Where was the last one? Was it an article in the Times, New York Times, or
yes, it was.
So
yes, it was.
Give a little flavor and background, then let's chat.
Well, I think that, you know, looking at the relationship between Apple and Google, and you look back at the fact that Eric Schmidt was on the board at Apple a few years back when the iPhone launched.
Well, until a few months ago.
Well, until a few months ago. But I'm talking about all, you know, you go back
all during
then,
the time they Apple, were working on the iPhone, he was on the board.
Yes, he was. And, you know, when the iPhone launched, I mean, Apple made it a point to talk specifically about how they built applications to use Google features and how, you know, how good that was and how good they were. And I remember him buoyantly saying how Google was very good at creating this back end and all these things and how Apple was building these applications in order to bring out that information to be able to use it. And, you know, after that, obviously, during this time period, there's been a lot of friction between Apple and Google because of the launch of operating systems for mobile devices. There's been, you know, they've been even snagging talent from each other. They've been fighting over companies out in the marketplace. And this has brought, you know, a fight now, especially with the launch of these Android phones, a head-to-head battle between Apple and Google on this space, and it's been quite heated, and it's been quite not friendly at all to this moment.
Well, and, now and I will add say to that, that the stories are also saying there's a lot of personal animosity too, like Jobs H. Smith. I mean, that's what the story.
Well, you know what? I know that's what the stories say, but I was thinking about this at the same time. You know, I think that if you look at the historical background of how Steve Jobs is and how his relationship was with Bill Gates at the time as well.
Yes.
I mean, come on. I mean, seriously, do you really think he really hated him?
Steve Jobs just isn't a warm, fuzzy person.
Well, he's not known for being
For being a dick.
Even-tempered. Okay, all right. He's not known for that. Okay, that's for damn sure. But, I mean, I don't see, you know, I see the fact that obviously he is very pissed off at a company that at the same time he views as a partner, but yet at the same time is encroaching on his turf and trying to build devices that compete with some of his devices and actually take some of the features of some of the devices. I mean, one of the things that I guess that I was seeing was, like, for example, is like saying, oh, grab a damn Android phone and put it beside the iPhone. And you're like, what the fuck? You look like you just copied the damn phone. I mean, look at the design. Look at how it looks. You know, of course, you know, they were talking about.
It depends on which Android phone. You mean the actual Google one?
Well, yeah. If you look at any of them without exposing the keyboard, for example, the main feature is versus most of other phones that have been before with a keyboard, it's that the first one, for example, if you remember the first one that came out, was a big, you know, a big display, a couple of buttons at the bottom. That wasn't a very common design. That design obviously had a lot more to look. It looked a lot more than an iPhone than anything else. If you thought about it in the base design, I think that, you know, this is a natural occurrence in this marketplace. So you got two companies like this that are out there, and obviously Apple is pissed that they feel that they were working with Google and all of a sudden they're launching devices to compete with them that, you know, in certain, you know, share certain features with devices that they had designed. And obviously they're not too thrilled about it, I guess. But given that that's happening, I'm not sure yet that we're at a point where there is a lot of market. Okay. For these devices and for the operating system and what we're talking about.
You mean they
about.
Could coexist?
I think that they could coexist to a certain extent. I don't think that there's, you know, I think that obviously you're getting competitive juices flowing out of a company that has thrived from this kind of confrontation for a long time. And I think even Google has doesn't seem to be backing away from being in a confrontational. I mean, they've been going up against Microsoft. They've been going up against Yahoo. They've been going up against everybody else. I think that these companies, because of the way that they have evolved over the last decade, I think this is natural that they would be so hyper-competitive and that this would cause this kind of friction between the two. But I actually think this is good for the tech industry, to be quite honest with you. I mean, I think we went there for a period.
Absolutely. I can see why Apple would be pissed. But in the end, for the consumer, for the users, you know, having a good, healthy competition here is nothing but good. I mean, it's going to make both of them build better crap. You know, I mean, not like either of them were building really bad stuff before, but if they start really getting into it, you know, it's just going to drive progress forward faster. And, you know, you see what, you see what happened with Microsoft when they had
their
monopoly, they stagnated. And I'd like to think, you know, hey, Apple's not going to do that. But bottom line is, at some point, if you are so clearly ahead of everybody else, it's just natural. Laziness will happen, and people will kick back and do the same thing again instead of really trying to push the envelope. But if you have this kind of, you know, vigorous competition going on, then it's going to push everybody forward, and we're going to get, you know, as a consumer, we're going to get much better crap, and that's just going to be good.
I agree. I think that this is one of probably the best things that has happened in the technology industry, that, you know, we moved away from that period when Microsoft just had this hegemony over the desktop, over operating systems, over everything, where everything was, you know, just related to their to Microsoft, where now you can turn to a lot of different providers to get this kind of hardware and software, and it's just going to create, I think, much better products for everybody down the line. I think it's fantastic. I'm really happy that this is happening. The one thing I see about it is just that, you know, I see a lot of vilification of how Steve Jobs is, for example, but I'm like, you know, I'm sorry, I'm not known for my...
You're not exactly mild either, huh?
No, and I think that no, but here's the one thing: if you see the executive turnover that's happened at Apple at his level, it's been very low. If Steve Jobs really, aside from the fact that he has these outbursts, and he's a person that obviously, you know, comes across like, you know, talks like straight out, doesn't give a shit. If he was that bad a guy, trust me, the turnover at that level would be far higher than it is. Because people will not stand for that, especially with the kind of money that these people are making. They would be leaving in droves. And that because I've seen that at other companies, when you've got that kind of when you cannot stand working for this person, it's really that driving me crazy. I'm sorry. People would just leave. I mean, especially with the money they're making. There's nothing tying them down to it. You know? So I think that, although at the same time, I'm sure that the stories are true, how he's gone and done that. There's one thing is, you know, taking outbursts and translating those into how everything is, it's not the same thing, I guess. That's what I'm saying.
A lot of people have said they put up with it because, you know, he may be a dick, but in the end, he's often right. And the stuff that he makes, you know, kicks ass, you know, because, you know, basically he'll come in and shut somebody down and tell them they're a complete idiot and that whatever they came up with was stupid and to go back and do something else or fire them and get somebody else to do with something else. But in the end, you'll go back and look at what he said and you're like, you know,
he was right.
He was right. You know,
he was right.
Maybe he's not good about sugarcoating
that, you know. Yeah. Right, you know, it's hard to argue with that, you know, it's like...
Okay, so let's take a break and we'll come back with something else. Back in a second.
This is the Curmudgeon's Corner Poem of the Week, brought to you by Notel Motel.
Incongruities, tells, by Magus Magnus. Range stares down a toy horse's nifty mane, deranged, imposing force. Sing to the curious, red apples to green apples. Farce be it to take you, the remote control or clicker. First for controlling, posing the answers, trite. Tripe, aura of intellectuality. But incongruities, lovely tells. There, stick it to the truthiness. Bling for your dollar a red plastic whistle. Bring hollow hours to blink forth the categories of gift wrap. Stripe your deceit. Stripes bareback, conscience. Auric for glory mongering. Olive green figurine of a soldier with hand grenade. Ill with wonderful, credible, creditable. Ill-gotten grins, grants, groans. Fleck to the gap, toothy. Stink prestige, block range, oranges to toy horses' manes, stanch the questioning. You're golden.
For more like this, go to notelmotel.org with a new poet each week and a new poem every weekday.
Okay, and we are back. So another thing that...
By the way!
Yeah.
One thing that I forgot to mention about Google that wasn't a news that I forgot to write down. I don't know if you saw the latest news about that Google apparently is 99% decided on shutting down, pulling out of China. I don't know if there's much to say about that other than it's actually happening. I think I personally sort of expected that. I didn't see a way that they could really come.
The other option was that China would go and say, "Oh, never mind. We're okay." You know, you don't have to censor your stuff after all. You know, the response, like we talked about when this first came up, is they may not be able to have a Google.cn hosted in China, but there's absolutely nothing stopping them from making a Google targeted at the Chinese audience. And then, you know, right. Google will try to block it and people will find the way around the block. And
China will try to block it.
Oh, sorry. China will try to block it. And, you know, you'll have that typical censorship arms race. But, you know, Google will be like, you know, hey, we're providing the service. If they want to block it, that's on them. But we're still going to have, you know, Chinese language Google out there. It's just going to be, you know, google.com/China or something instead of google.cn.
Oh, and on that note, just as a little comment before so we can finish this subject. The Venezuelan president, Hugo Chavez, today pronounced saying, let me quote this. Hugo Chavez says, "The internet cannot be something open where anything is said and done and demands a crackdown on a critical news site." So there you go.
Yeah, well,
yes, we you know.
And that, you know, frankly, that's going around. I mean, that's, you know, it's not like it's just China. There's lots of countries where, you know, the censorship impulse is strong. And, you know, even in the U.S., you know, we're not perfect either. You know, so we'll see how it plays out. But it'll be interesting to see Google actually pull out and whether or not they, you know, aggressively put together a, you know, a China targeted website that's not based in China, or whether they just, you know, sort of let it be.
But let me ask you a question. What do you think about, I mean, do you think that China can sustain this in the long run? What they're trying to do?
All of those questions end up being, you know, how long is the long run? In the long run, no, I don't think so. In the long
to me, the long run is 10 to 20 years. That's what I'm thinking, long run.
I think probably not, but you're still talking a short enough time frame where it is possible. I mean, I think in the long, long run, the like much longer than the time frame you're talking about, I think in the end, you know, to quote the silly mantra, information wants to be free, and, you know, there will be ways to route around any censorship or restrictions that happen. And I believe that's not
it's just, always happened.
That's not just political censorship. It's also like, you know, I view, you know, all the copyright nonsense as a form of that as well. But I think, you know, this eventually all of that stuff will be routed around, because all it is adding inefficiency and keeping people from the information they want. And eventually the barriers there will fall. But if you've got, you know, a big government putting strong restrictions in place with a big heavy hand and the force, the full force and power of a police state behind it, you can shut things down for a long time.
I agree. I agree. Okay. All right. Well, okay, so we got that topic. Okay, I don't know how we're doing right now with time.
Fine enough. You got 6 minutes till the next break, and you wanted to talk about the Al-Qaeda 7.
Well, I just wanted to mention the fact that, you know, once again, we're having people that... Yeah, I just don't understand this. We have a system of laws that was created with certain protections.
Laws? What the hell are you talking about?
Bosses. I know, it's fucking unbelievable. There was a note today by somebody who was defending these attorneys. He was the person who actually defended Timothy McVeigh.
Uh-huh.
And you know, he talked about the kind of problems he had, you know, that it was, he took the case, you know, simply because as an attorney, he believed in, you know, in the Constitution and the fact that you know, people had the right to be defended, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it is part of our process, and how literally it really destroyed his law practice. The fact that he took this case. It took him apparently about 7 years to rebuild his practice up to the level of where he was before. He took the case, and that, you know, he did it, you know, knowing that the case was probably very difficult to defend. That there was, you know, that it, but still, you know, he was doing it because that is, you know, it is our system. I mean, somebody needs to be there in order to defend the clients, whoever they may be. And he also mentioned a little bit that if you went back in history, you were talking about so many people that should have been, you know, people that defended World War II criminals, World War I, Civil War. I mean, you go even all the way back to people who defended, people in the American Revolution, you know, that defended people that were, I think, if I remember correctly, that joined the British against the U.S. I mean, and that would have disqualified a number of people in our history that had higher positions, for Pete's sake. I mean, it's just. I don't understand why people. I mean, we have a system. It needs these elements. We are supposed to have a defense for these people. I mean, why do people try to vilify?
Oh well,
these elements of our system.
What did Liz Cheney say? They're supplying support and comfort to the enemy.
Right.
Well, and yes. You know, look, here's the fundamental thing that's forgotten about all this. Let's not even take it on the completely abstract level of, you know, everybody needs a defender, even the worst of the worst. The reality is we're talking about defending people in Guantanamo, and we have released tons and tons of people out of Guantanamo after, you know, forget about the Obama administration, the Bush administration released lots of these people when, after keeping them for several years, eventually said, you know, we ain't got nothing. You know,
we ain't got nothing.
You know, in many cases, and I'm not talking, the people who they got nothing, but they're really convinced they're really bad people, they kept most of those people anyway, even though they got nothing, or at least nothing that could be usable in court. But there were tons of people that they released where they actually were like, you know, are bad. You didn't do anything. Go home. After keeping him on Guantanamo forever. So the fundamental thing here, the reason why this, you know, I believe in the abstract principle, even when it is the worst of the worst or whatever, but the fundamental thing here is the reason that it's there is because until you go through the process, we don't really know. You know, it's not these people are not terrorists. They are accused terrorists, and there is a burden of proof, and people have to, you know, and in many cases, if that burden is not met, well, damn right they should be let loose, you know?
Yes.
You know, and in many, and again, many cases here, even the Bush administration found some of these people and said, you know, you're in the wrong place at the wrong time. Sorry about losing the last 8 years of your life or whatever, you know? And, you know, sorry about that torture. You know, see you later.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, oh, God. I don't know. And still, even though they see this, they still go out and try to create a lynch mob up against these attorneys that go out and are just trying to, defend our Constitution, really, to be somebody who's there that honors the rules that we set up in order to defend.
Well, and I will say, though, to be fair, there has been backlash, even in the conservative Republican community against some of those comments.
I know there has been a bit too far. I know there has been. I do recognize that. I mean, it's true. It's just that I guess it's just, I don't know. It's just very frustrating when I see this. To me personally, I guess.
No. Okay. Well. With that, let's take a break, and then we'll see if we can scare up one more topic to finish up with. We'll be right back.
Tag yourself with Blue Protection. La 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 la.
For the most accurate health information, visit www.cdc.gov or call 1-800-CDC-INFO 24/7.
Okay. Okay, we are back. So before we go on to anything else, I don't want to neglect that we did get some more feedback in the last week.
Let's go through the feedback.
I'll tell you one first that I haven't passed on to you yet, and I forget the exact words, but we got feedback from...
they said I was a moron?
No, from one listener named Kelly saying who we once interviewed, a McCain supporter, that she appreciated our special guest star in the background last week. So that was, of course, Alex making some noise during the show. So thank you very much, Kelly. I will pass that along to Alex. And then we also had...
I'm sure Alex will appreciate that. Yes.
I'm sure he will. And then we had a follow-up from Matt, who you answered a tax question for last week, basically saying, sorry, Yvonne, you were wrong.
Well, I think the one thing is that I sent back the note because I did mention that I wasn't totally qualified with it, and I looked it up at that moment. I did find a more thorough note explaining the tax credit and how it worked. And Matt was correct that tax credit for existing homeowners is not in effect until November 6th, 2010. So
basically what we'd said – what we'd said last week was that there was a smaller amount before November 6th and a bigger amount after November 6th if you closed, TurboTax said come his first time through or something. That was an error. The actual thing is the whatever tax law it was took effect November 6th. So if you closed before November 6th, you get buckus. And after November 6th, you get the credit. So
That's correct. And it ends again in May? And actually, I'll get the date before I go and I say something else. But there is a link that I'll actually – I'll There is a link to it that I had actually sent to Matt. I don't have it handy right now, but I believe that if you look it up, there is a time period that it's only valid through, and it started November 6th and it ended sometime in May, I think is the date. You don't quote me on it, but you can look it up. It's a limited time only that you can take advantage of.
The link, in case anybody cares out there, is turbotax.intuit.com/support/kb/tax-content/tax-tips/7602.html. Nice friendly URL.
Oh, yeah, that's very friendly. I think maybe we could post it somewhere. You could post it on your blog, and maybe that'll make it easier for people to find if they're so inclined to do so.
Wait.
Okay.
I will, I was going to do something, but...
You were going to do something nice and interesting.
I was going to make one of those little abbreviated URLs, but...
one of those tiny URLs?
Yeah, but the widget I had didn't work, so forget it. I could still go to the website. Yeah, so screw it.
Technical problems.
You know, and who is going to bother to check anyway? So forget it. Taxes are fun. And I still have to do mine. I'll get to that one of these weeks. I got one more month. I got one more month to get it done.
I started working on my taxes. I think I mentioned earlier. I haven't finished them yet, but I already figured out I owe money, so I don't know.
So you're in no hurry.
No, not particularly. I usually have filed my taxes if I've got a refund due well before February 15th. Or at least before the end of February, for sure. But just the fact that I'm still
every time one of the proposals comes up for
just to mention November 6th through May 1st, 2010. Okay,
so this is an incentive to buy or sell a house during that time period.
I'll quote it from here. Hang on.
It's for buyers.
Current homeowners or those who have owned a home recently may be eligible for a tax credit worth as much as $6,500 on a home purchased after November 6, 2009 and before May 1st, 2010. Okay?
Is this a stimulus bullshit kind of thing to try to get people to be buying homes sort of – jack up the market again? Is that the purpose?
$6,500 isn't gonna create a housing bubble, but it'll help if you're right now in the market to help something. $6,500 not a bad extra few bucks to get if you're buying a house. I'll tell you that.
Yeah. So I was gonna say again, every once in a while people. Yeah, we'll be floating these tax simplification ideas of various ways you could make taxes dirt simple. And, they never go anywhere because, there are a couple reasons there. One is this kind of stuff where people are trying to get a policy. There's a public policy goal here. They want people to buy more homes. So
sure.
The way they do it, they mess around with the tax code. And because they mess
around... Put money in your pocket!
But because they mess around with, they want to do this thing for houses, and they want to do this thing for small businesses, and they want to do this thing for, people who raise goats, whatever, So that's how it gets all messy. And then, of course, there's the whole, we were just quoting from Intuit's website. I read an article a few months back, and it wasn't federal taxes, but it was some state, I don't know, California or something, who was... it's seriously looking at some tax simplification stuff. I could have the state wrong. I don't know. But, basically Intuit descended with, an army of lobbyists to stop this thing because, the last thing they want, or H&R Block or any of these folks, is simple fucking taxes. I think it was one of these proposals that basically said, hey, look, if your taxes
flat
are,
tax
it, well not even the flat tax it was although I like the flat tax idea, a lot of people don't, but it wasn't even that. It was more like a If your taxes are completely determined by your W-2 and other forms that the government gets automatically, and that you're not going to be claiming anything strange or adding documentation beyond the things that your financial institutions and your employer submit to the government anyway, then they'll just you don't have to file. They'll
automatically automatic.
They'll calculate it. If they owe you money, they'll send you a check. If you owe them money, they'll send you a bill. Done.
I like that.
I
like that.
And for a significant portion of the population, that's all you need.
I agree.
There are people like you and even to some extent me who have, complexities in our things that require you to do this and that and blah blah blah, but for the most part,
80% of the population doesn't need that shit.
And and they could probably close the gap of 15 of the remaining 20% by requiring a little bit more documentation to automatically be sent to the government for financial transactions.
But then we have all those H&R Block employees unemployed.
I feel so sad.
Well, they screwed you anyway. I mean, what the hell? They're the guys that fucked up your taxes that one time, and having to pay it.
H&R, I'll be fair here. H&R Block did not fuck up my taxes. They actually saved me some money when I went to them over what I'd already found in TurboTax. So it was actually worth it.
So who was the guy? What was it at that one time?
There were two things that screwed me. One, I took a loan against my 401k and then left that employer, meaning that the loan from my 401k converted to income that had not been withheld.
The taxable income, right.
There was a five-figure tax bill right there.
But there was some mistake that somebody had made.
The other mistake was my previous employer, prior to where I work today, had taken some income that should have been... which was it should have been on my W-2, but instead they put it on 1099.
That's right.
And they refused to correct it because their books were already closed for the previous year.
Right.
And that cost me a couple grand.
Oh well. All right.
Yeah.
Well, anyway.
Water under the bridge.
All right.
Anyway, I think we're done here.
It's already done. We're done. We're out.
Okay, so thanks everybody for joining us. As usual, email me at abelsmay@abelsmay.com if you have any questions, comments, if you want to say anything. Or comment on my blog when I post. And of course, tell your friends. We always like listeners. So thanks everybody for joining us, and we'll talk to you again next week. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, thanks, Yvonne.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.